Okay, and you want the others to roll? All right, thank you. You really give me peace of mind. But we got to break someone in Fenekir. After Pesach, you have to get someone who will help be Mabit's Torah across the world. Okay, anyway, today is, that clock is a little slow, but my watch, I sit with the Israeli radio. It's Sunday, the 25th of March, 2012. And once again, a fond hello to my students who are still last week, right? When does the Kollel end? On Thursday officially or even before? Yeah, no, Thursday. So we still have 1 week here, unlike other yeshivot, but we end much earlier in June, so it evens out. And to all those listening across the world, since we met last Monday, the world has turned over many, many times. And first of all, just let me comment on the tragedy in France. It's really something within the tragedy that the little boy, the three-year-old boy who still didn't have an upsharing, Gavriel Sandler, was named for the Rabbi Gavriel Holzberg, who was killed in Mumbai. And it's very frightening. And I always tell people, if you name a child after someone who, Lo Aleinu, was killed, we have so many here, so many children named after David Applebaum, but always add on something, David Chai, Mashehu Kazeh, to indicate. And just this past Shabbat, a girl, a granddaughter of David, was named after Nava, his daughter who was killed, and Nava Shani. They added on the name Shani. And my wife was wondering, I said, maybe Shani represents Sheni. It's a second Nava, and she should have a Richa German Tovim. But what a tragedy, and Hashem Yikom Daman. Of course, I want to mention the death of the Rosh Yeshiva, of Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg. And I can give you, if anyone wants later, some booklets that have some details on him. And what's fascinating about Rav Scheinberg is that I knew him, I knew his brother even better. Rav Shmuel taught in YU, and they were both YU graduates. Rav Chaim Pinchas was here at Talmudim, the Mechita. I don't know if there's anyone left in the world today who can say they were Talmudim of the Mechita. I yet knew many Talmudim of the Mechita, but that was the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. Someone who was a big Talmud Chacham died during the past year or two, who lived here. He also was a Talmud of the Mechita. And you all know that Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg has many Sliyot. He was Mashgiach in Chafetz Chaim for, I believe, a quarter of a century. He established, came in Aliyah when Israel was even before we did, even before I did, and established the yeshiva, which has been Kaina Olamo. Americans, Israelis, Russians, I know all types of students who benefited from his yeshiva in Mata stuff. But what's most impressive about Rav Scheinberg, and I have to say within the context of the modern world, he was an Isha Emet. And I can give you many examples. You see that even now with all the Hespedim and what's being published, they all have to write that he attended Yeshivas Reb Skolchanan, was a Talmud of the Mechita, Reb Meisher Soloveitchik, Rabbi Revel, has smicha from them, at least from Reb Meisher and Rabbi Revel. I believe when he got smicha, the Mechita was not yet alive. The Mechita was not yet alive. But it's because he was honest. At Reb Shmuel's funeral, every maspid glossed over the fact that he taught at YU for so many decades, except his brother, who mentioned how many years he was a Rebbe in Yeshivas Reb Skolchanan. On a personal level, I can tell you, if you open up Washington, you can fill in the name. When I tell a story about a prominent Rosh Yeshiva in Matastov, I believe I say Matastov, so it's a giveaway, and the beautiful story he told his Talmidim, then when he walked out of the yeshiva, it was the World Series, it was 1986, when the Miracle Mets overturned Boston, you know, the very famous sixth game that led to a seventh game, and they won. The ball that went through, I think his name was Boone, through his legs. Excuse me?
Bill Buckner.
Buckner, Bill Buckner, okay. You're a Bucky in contemporary baseball history. And the Rosh Yeshiva described how he walked out of Mata stuff, out of the yeshiva, and these American kids are talking in baseball, and he said within a minute he was a kid again. And he was like the Brooklyn Dodgers versus the New York Yankees. He was reliving his youth. And I mentioned that in my Hesper on Joe DiMaggio, and a wise Alec Talmud of mine gave the tape to the Mata stuff Rosh Yeshiva. And the next day he asked Rav Scheinberg, "Nu, what does he think?" And he says, "Rabbi Rakefit quoted me absolutely correctly." So I recall his memory fondly, and let's dedicate the shir. And to die at 101 your heart is, we can accept it. To be mowed down in Toulouse, if I'm pronouncing it right, it breaks the heart, And I got a call last night from a lady who I never met, who just finished Washington, and she's living here over 20 years in Beit Shemesh, and she's giving me hell that I don't lead a march on America demanding that every frum Jew come in Aliyah. She said, "You can do it, your book and the message." I try to calm her down, and I refer her to my lectures online on Zionism and Aliyah and all that goes with it. Okay, now, well, it's a very fascinating and to a certain degree a deep material today, and it's insoluble to a certain degree. But we saw last week the Rambam contradicts himself. There's one Rambam at times in the Mishnah Torah. There's another Rambam at times in the Tshuvata Rambam. And who do we follow? Who do we go by? And the high point of last week, I believe, was Reb David Yosef in his introduction to the Per Hadar, which is the edited edition of the Rambam's Tshuvat, or at least those Tshuvat that appeared in the original Per Hadar, because Rabbi Professor Blau's three volumes of Tshuvata Rambam have a lot more. That already has what Rav Avram Freiman published in 35, the Pe'er Hadar, Aram, the Tshuvat written in Arabic, Tshuvat written in Hebrew, and as I told you, Professor Blau, Yehoshua Blau, is a very unique individual. He should live and be well. He doesn't live far from here today. He lives in the senior citizens, or the assisted living, or whatever they call it, opposite Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. When he turned 90, although he was in good health and can walk and everything, but when he turned 90, he and his wife gave up their apartment in my neighborhood and moved in opposite the Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. And Professor Blau had the advantage that he was the greatest expert, not just in Hebrew, but in Arabic as well. So his edition is considered the classic edition of Tshuvata Rambam that we have until now. But Rav Yosef's son, Rav David Yosef, deals with the whole question and brings down Machlokes HaPoskim. And there's something I said that I don't know if you appreciate the, I don't want to use the word depth, but after, you know, as one who has studied Torah for so many decades, I recognize what I said was a chiddush, and it may be the only way to approach these problems, that when it comes to the Shulchan Aruch per se, or when it comes to the Mishnah Torah, there's a concept of Hiskimu Aleim Kol Yisrael. And when all is said and done, we have to follow the code, the Mishnah Torah. Could be. And this is what the Lubavitcher Rebbe said, that we have to remember that when the Rambam wrote the Mishnah Torah, that was his clock. That's what he thought at that time. It's like quoting a psak of Reb Moshe. It could be Reb Moshe later changed his mind to a certain degree, but nevertheless, when he gave that psak, it was a psak, and that's what he wrote in the Mishnah Torah. Could be. And then at the end of the shiur, when I showed you the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and what was very fascinating to me is how he says exactly what Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, said when it comes to the Kitve Yad, and who says they were all Ga'ainim. In other words, it could very well be the reason they threw it into the Geniza was that it was on Ratzak, and they didn't want it around. So, you know, it's like a kid taking notes today. I remember in the Rav Shir, one time we had an exam, it has to be in 57, and we were frightened out of our wits. You don't know how easy you have it compared to the tension we were under with our Bechinat. And we already were less tension than the generation before us, because those were oral Bechinat, where you went in, and the Rav and Reb Shmuel Belkin and Reb Moshe Shatzkis were sitting in front of you and asking you questions. So we already had written Bechinat that Reb Aaron Lichtenstein marked. He was the Rav's assistant, so we had it a little bit better. But could you imagine, we went and we took someone's notes. I don't remember who. It was not Reb Heschel. Heschel then was a young kid. He was not one of the stars yet. We took the notes. It had to be of an older student who had learned with the Rav before. And we stenciled them. You know, that's like mimeographing today. You don't recall a stencil. You used to get your hands all dirty with the ink and you would run it off with the machine. And the Rav got hysterical. And we, yes, and he called back at all the stenciled copies and he put a chayim, no one is today, stencil his notes. So we asked him, Rebbe, what's the difference between what we write, we scribble our notes when you're giving shiur, and between a stenciled edition? And he told us, and he was right. He said, if anyone will uncover the stenciled edition, they'll think I approved it. It looks official. Your notes, they'll know that it's Amayar, it's scribbling something. So, you see, if you scribble notes and you put it into Seamus, they're going to find it 1,000 years from now. Oh, this is a Talmud of Rav Lichtenstein. These are his notes, a Talmud of Rav Shechta. These are his notes. And, of course, your understanding of Rav Lichtenstein was on the level of, let's say, 60%, 65%. And that's what the Rav told Professor Liebman. And that's what the Lubavitcher Rebbe said in his sikha. So you have to be very careful, and you can't jump for joy when you find a Ktav Yad out of the past. Who knows how reliable it is? And these are problems we live with and struggle with. And I'm not here, God forbid, to say to you, disregard scientific Jewish scholarship. It's very important. And even the Rebbe says it should continue. But you have to do it with a certain sense of diffidence. You can never be certain. All right, it's interesting. And if what Rabbi Benjamin Bleich said is correct, that they discovered a Ktav Yad in the Vatican, Ha'isha Nichmesh B'Shlosha Devarchan Drachan Midin Torah, so then it shows that the Tshuvat HaRambam is correct. Tshuvat Ben HaRambam, Avraham Ben HaRambam. But Rakefet's reaction remains intact, that throughout the millennium, the Rishonim and the Achronim somehow did not accept the Tshuvat HaRambam. And everyone tries, Sifa Enfrin, to explain the Rambam's original position and what's the difference between Kesef and Shtar. And if you look into the Ramban in Sefer HaMitzvot and the whole Inyan of Lekuchin and his whole discussion, you'll see that I may not be wrong in the analysis I gave you last week. But nevertheless, if that is the proper rendition of the Rambam, all problems are solved. Okay. What's fascinating is two poskim, above all, become a lightning rod, if I'm using the right term, for this very question. And it's not so much the Rambam, it's more the Rush and the Mechaber. And I'd like to devote, it could be, we'll have the most of today's shiur dealing with Rabbeinu Asher, dealing with the Rush. Now, you have to understand, the Rush's influence in Psak Halacha is perhaps the greatest influence of any of the Rishonim. And there are reasons why. It's his life story. I followed Yosef Chaim around. He was shopping in Rami Levi. So you follow him around and you watch what he does. Lahachis, he's buying for Pesach. He takes every product that says La'ochle Kitniyot Bilvad and he holds it up and he shows all the Ashkenazim around him. See that? How unfortunate you are that you were not born a Sfadi. And he tells them, he makes a special bracha. He adds on, everyone is leaving out the Shalom Asanis. It's not humanism, Shalom Asanis. It's not feminism, Shelo Asani Yisha. He added on another bracha, Shelo Asani Ashkenazi. Yosef Chaim, what does this have to do with the Rush? Explain to the class. The Rush combined both traditions. And his influence, in other words, until the Rush, you had a Sfadic tradition, you had an Ashkenazic tradition. And the Rush, who begins his life in Ashkenaz and winds up in the Spanish area, within this great Rishon Posek, Mipivanu Chaim, he combines both traditions. And that's what makes him such a focal, influential figure. There's no one else you can say that about. Tosfot was purely Ashkenaz. All right, it's true. Rabbi Yehuda Levi's mentioned in the Tosfot. Ibn Ezra's mentioned in the Tosfot. There were all types of theories that those were later addendums. But the heart of Tosfot, even if you agree that that was the original Tosfot, Tosfot is 98% Ashkenaz. Who made that switch? The Rambam, no matter where he lived, and we're not even certain, is he buried in Tiberias? The chances are not, and yet there's a kever there and everyone goes there. But he was totally Eidot HaMizrach. And this was the greatness of the Rush, that he fused to a certain degree two traditions. Now, he was a tremendous influence on his son. And you all know Rabbi Yaakov, Baal HaTurim, which is the most famous of his sons, because in a few minutes we're going to quote another son, Rabbi Yehuda. But Rabbi Yaakov, Baal HaTurim, I quote from his Hakdamah Torah Chaim, Ve'ein litzor mi laharich barayot ala lahavi dvarim psukim, uv'makom sheyesh deyot shonot echtavein, ve'echtov achatach maskanet Adoni Avi Harash Zal. Quote, end quote. And you see what he's saying here is, and there's a lot of truth to this, I'm an Ashkenazi, Yosef Chaim is a Sfardi. So he'll bring the opinions of the various poskim, but ultimately the psak he relies upon is his father. And it's more than just Kibbut Aviyim. You follow me, Daniel? It's because his father fused both traditions. And if his father reached a certain maskana, then he felt the psak is like his father. Now, it's not just Rabbi Yaakov who had such derech habits for the Rush, but you take the Mechaber, and I just want to show you very interestingly, I guess it's only in Israel, if you buy a secular paper, and Friday I told you, I get to do it, my daughter gets married, and we trade, and I have to know what's going on. My grandchildren are mad at me. They have no idea. How do you read such trash? What can I do? But take a look. I take a look at Marav, page 12 of Friday's Marav. They uncovered the Tzavar, Rabbi Yosef Karo, and he asked that every one of his descendants gather at his grave on the 450th Yahrzeit. And there's a great, 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 great grandson, and he's organizing it. And they have a whole article here on Rabbi Yosef Karo, who he was, and his picture. And it's very moving to see this with all that we have going on. It's very moving to see this in Marav. So we have a big event coming up, 450 years since he wrote the Shulchan Aruch. He said to me, they should meet at 400 years and 450. There may be Kabbalistic incantations here, Kabbalistic insights here that are beyond the simple Litvish Jew like myself. But it's a beautiful thought, and I've taught descendants of his. There are endless Kairos in the world, and of course there are many descendants who have different names who come down through a feminine division or subdivision. So you all know that Rabbi Yosef Karo, Shemi Pivanu Chayim, Enavanu Sheltim. I mean, I don't have to say it, I've said it so many times, I'll deal with it next year in great depth, but 99% of what we do in our religious life is in accordance with the Psakim of Rabbi Yosef Karo. no one had such influence as Rabbi Yosef Karo. And he, in his introduction, you all know, he says in the Beit Yosef, and the Beit Yosef, we all know, precedes the Shulchan Aruch. In the Beit Yosef, he says, all his psukim are based upon majority vote. 2 out of 3. And who are the 3 he selects? The Rush, the Rif, the Rambam. And it's the Rush overwhelming. And I'll tell you something else. You fellas don't realize, or you do realize, how lucky you are. And you know, each generation, the innovation. I asked my mother, I think I spoke somewhere else and I mentioned this. I asked my mother, what was the greatest thing she saw in her life that spanned 98 years? So my mother said to me, indoor plumbing. Okay? And then you think about it. Now, you don't realize what you have. When I was growing up, you want to find the source in the Rishonim. Where do you find it? You have computerization today. You have the Bar Ilan project. It's beyond words what they have done. So I want to tell you that the Tshuva Parash, see, you just know the Rush from his Piskei Din in back of every Gemara. You should know that the Tshuva HaRush were extremely important in understanding halacha and the history of halacha. And it's, you know, many hundreds and hundreds of pages. And where do you find what you're looking for? Tiv University, Institute for Research in Jewish Law, in 1965, the first index they published was an index to the Tshuva HaRush. And I remember the joy. Again, today it has no value. You're not even going to look at a sefer like this because everything there and much more is available on the Bar Ilan research engine for their index or whatever you wish to call it to the Tshuvat. But you have no idea how happy we were, what an event it was when this came out. I still remember Mechmala, the volume. Then they came out with some other volumes of indexing Rishonim. And then computerization took over, and all this became, redundant, to use a word they use in England quite a bit. All this became redundant. Okay. Now, giving the Rush all the credit for how important he is, let's see, he contradicts himself. And I want to quote a sefer, which was one of the earliest sfarim that we were to have an edited edition. Shelet Tshuvot Zichron Yehuda. Zichron Yehuda was written by the Rush's son, Rabbeinu Yehuda ben Arash. Everyone knows Rabbi Yaakov. The Rush had other children. And this is Zichron Yehuda, Rabbeinu Yehuda ben Arash. If I'm not mistaken, there already was an edited edition as early as 1846 that came out in Berlin. It's been reprinted many times. I'm holding in front of me a 1972 reprint. There may be reprints subsequently. I don't know. Now, look in to Zichron Yehuda. Look in to She'ela Tet Vav. And this tshuva, so fascinating, it teaches us so much. The question is written by his nephew. The nephew is the son of another brother, Reb Shlomo. And the nephew's name is Asher, named for his grandfather. I don't know whether he was named for his grandfather after his death. This is the want among Ashkenazim. Or whether he was named for his grandfather, B'chayav, as is the one among Eidot HaMizrach, as you all know from that beautiful Brit that we celebrated of Chaim Moshe, the son of Moshe Chaim. Chaim Moshe David, if I have it correctly. Yosef Chaim is not hard for me to say because I have a grandson, Yosef Chaim, and Yosef Chaim, I don't have to tell you, Baghdadi. But Yosef Chaim becomes Chaim Yosef David, also in honor of Reb David Abu Chatzira. Okay. So I don't know. But look at the way he writes to his uncle. Yelamdeini Mori, ki ra'iti b'tshuvat zikeini, kvod zikeini yalav ha-shalom. Klal chafav, simen aleph. Asama seh shaya onei b'matzai shabbat. V'lo hivdil, v'lo hitpalel. U'biyom aleph acherei shekavru ha-meit, hitpalelu tfilat shachrit v'hivdil. Shadayin huzman havdala lemi shelo hivdil belaila. And gentlemen, here is a classic question that you will have in the rabbinate. You all know that in the American rabbinate today, 90% of the questions deal with aveilut. I don't know if that's fortunate, unfortunate. In a way, it's fortunate because I'll tell you, you get very few kitchen questions today. Everyone has two sinks. Everyone has so much separation. It's very rare. I know that I have two ovens. I have two sinks. I have two microwaves, which it's no big deal today. If I had more room, I would have two refrigerators. I just have no room to put it. Everything is so cheap today, even in Israel. I know people who have two kitchens, one olia, one Pesach. The first time I saw that was in Reb Mendel Zaks's home on the west side. The Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law, the Balkan of the yeshiva. I was quite close to him. And in his home, I couldn't believe it, he had two, it was a duplex, and downstairs, it was an apartment, but a duplex downstairs, there was a Pesach, the kitchen. Afterwards, I saw it in many homes. Here in Yerushalayim, I can't do it because there's no place to put a second kitchen. Thank God we have room for the first kitchen. So we don't get many shayas in kasha. Also, you got to remember, no one kashas today. No one, everything is done. Even in Israel, you buy the chickens, you buy the meat already. Kashid kedat v'kedin. It's a different world today. My wife was yet taught how to kasha chickens and kasha meat. And today, lo dubim v'lo yar. So in a way, it's a good sign that we don't get. It's a sign of wealth that we're on a higher level of a living standard. We don't get, but shailas and avelut you're going to get. Now, this shaila is a she'ela, is exactly a no-name. All of you know, when it comes to a ninut, a no-name, it's not, I don't want to go on, have you learned a ninut yet? So you know, there's a basic machlokes, what does a ninut mean? Does it mean you're exempt from mitzvot? Or does it mean you're enjoined from doing mitzvot? It's a big difference. If you're exempt, you can say, I want to be frum, I want to do the mitzvah, I don't care. If you're enjoined, then chas v'chalila, you should make a bracha when you're not allowed. And the Rav has a lot of Torah. He took the point of view, you're enjoined, and you all know the Rav's Torah, that someone dies, your world is shattered, it's a tragedy, how can you face God, your faith is shattered, who am I, what am I, am I any different than an animal? I'm quoting from the Rav's famous talk, Pashat Chukat. I did it in the Kollel maybe 30 years ago. I'd like to do it again at a certain point and record it. Beautiful talk. But when I give it, I add Makarot, I add a little bit to it. And I give the Rav's Makarot, because many times he quotes something, as you know, from my introduction to the Rav, the world of, the Rav would say in Zohar State, it says in the Zohar, no, you go and find it. And no one would dare say, Rebbe, where in the Zohar? In Medrash State, the Medrash State. But I made my, you know, I hope I found what he was referring to. I don't want to be a wise guy and say I'm positive, Daniel, you follow me? I hope I found what the Rav was referring to. So the Rav says, Anina, you're enjoined? Okay, so someone died, let's say, on Shabbat. You start making the preparations for the funeral Saturday night. The funeral is Sunday morning. So Saturday night, Sunday morning, you're completely enjoined from doing any mitzvah, doing anything positive. You can't do you can't eat chazi, you can't do a lav, but you can't make brachot, etc. So you don't make havdalah. No, what happens after the funeral? After the funeral, now you can daven. Of course, it would be a whole question if you can put on tefillin. If it was Yom HaMita, Yom HaKfuri, you certainly can't put on tefillin. If the Yom HaMitu is a different day, the Yom HaKfura a different day already, there's, you'll see it's discussed by the Achronim. It could be that you put on tefillin without a bracha when you come back and you daven, if it's time for shakrit, if not, you daven mincha, so you daven mincha with tefillin without a bracha. Could be. I'm not paskin lahalacha. You can work it out and look it up. But if it's Yom HaKfura, Yom HaMita, you're certainly exempt. Like I told you with my mother, had my mother died before we daven shachris, my brother and I wouldn't have been able to put on tefillin because the Yom HaMita, Yom HaKfura was not just one day, it was 4 hours apart. But we already had daven, so it wasn't halacha l'maisa. So the person didn't make havdalah. Do you make havdalah Sunday morning when you come back from the cemetery? And in the Tshuva Tarash, he paskins that you make havdalah. That the fact that you couldn't make it Saturday night, but you all know you can make havdalah through Tuesday. If you're familiar with Diane Grunfeld's famous book, which again, your generation doesn't appreciate what an impact that book made, a book in English on Shmirat Shabbat, came out in the mid-50s, The Sabbath by Diane Isidore Grunfeld, based upon Rav Hirsch's teachings, and it shows you how a Jew is so caught up with Shabbat. The first 3 days of the week, he thinks about the past Shabbat. The next 3 days, he's looking to the next Shabbat that's going to come. Shabbat Hayom Yom Rishon B'Shabbat Hayom Yom Sheni. Beautiful volume, had a big impact. So you all know that until Tuesday night, you can make Havdalah. So Sunday, you come on from the cemetery, you make Havdalah. And that's logical, that's what he writes in the Tshuva. Fine. And the nephew asked the Rosh, his son, u'b'piskei brachot perek beit hikriyu kidavah Rabbi Yehuda, but he brings down a machleket rishonim, and he's machriya like one of the rishonim, shekatav she'ein tzarich lechavdil kiven shebishas chiyuv havdala haya patur. V'lo yadati leshev divrei hasheolot in apsakim. And wow, this is black and white, the very question that's haunting us. In his psakim, on the sugiyim brachot, he paskins lahalacha that if you are an onain, it's not that you're just exempt at that moment. It's that there was never a chovah to make havdalah that week for you. That week, you cannot make havdalah. Shabbat ended, havdalah had nothing to do with you. You are enjoined. You cannot. And once you cannot, you don't make after you come home the next day. And that's the way the Rosh paskins in his psakim. And his poor grandson asked his uncle, I'm all confused. Believe me, we're confused. What do you do? Who do you follow? Do you follow the tshuva? Or do you follow the psak? And this is the way he turns to the uncle. Now, look at the beautiful Hebrew. And he writes to his uncle, look at this beautiful. V'al yiyeh devarai alech l'toreach, ki torehi, v'ilmod ani tzarech, v'ha'avrich li b'tshuvatcha k'gon zeh, p'tach p'icha li'ilenhu, Ne'un talmidcha ha-tzayir ha-katan Asha ben achicha Reb Shlomo Zal. And look at the modesty. Look what he says. I'm deaf and dumb. Open my mouth. Inform me. Don't consider it a tircha. He pleads with his uncle, answer me. Now, look at the beautiful way he asked the question. What's amazing here? The uncle answers in limited words. These were Rishonim. No Rav today would answer this quickly. You answer this quickly, no one's going to listen today. You have to explain yourself. You have to give reasons. You have to take for granted the inquirer is not a big Talmud Chacham. You have to spell it out. But these were Rishonim. They're like the Goyim, early Rishonim. He answers, Tshuva. B'makom shani motzei divrei poskim v'hashutim sodrim ze'etzet, ani holeich acha hapsakim, shechencha yu achronim, v'shalom, dodecha Yehuda ben Harash.
Wow.
One sentence. Clear. Succinct. To the point. No diffidence. No hesitancy. Wherever I find a machloket between the tshuvat and the psakim, I follow the psakim. They were the last. Gentlemen, halavai, this would close the issue. According to the Zichron Yehuda, it's no question. Chad v'chalak, modern Hebrew, chad v'chalak, sharp and clear, right to the point. The psakim were written last. No? What's life all about? What's life all about? Have you ever held a volume in your hand that was owned by an author? The name Rabbi Bernard Rebbe mean anything to you? We're only sitting here. American Jewry only stands. This was the first man to hit gold in America. The gold of Torah. Rabbi Dov Rebbe did the first doctorate ever done at Dropsy College. Dropsy College Philadelphia organized about 1909. Moshe Aaron Dropsy left a substantial amount of money, and this was the first serious college organized in America to engage in scientific Jewish scholarship. I would imagine that their prototype when they organized it were the rabbinic seminaries in Germany, but this was organized as a, not as a rabbinic seminary, but as a general post-university program. Today it's part of the University of Pennsylvania. It was swallowed up by the Judaic Studies Graduate Department. Rabbi Rebbe was the first graduate, the first PhD, 1911 he gave in his thesis, 1912 he got his doctorate, and his doctorate, fascinating, on the comparison and the differences between our halachic traditions and Sadducean and Karaitic deviations. What's interesting is that Rabbi Dr. Belkin wrote a doctorate on a similar topic dealing with Philo and the Philonian differences between our traditions. Both of these great Talmidei Chachamim / scholars gave it all up to build what is today Yeshiva University. Their scholarship was greatly compromised because it's impossible to have built the yeshiva and the college and the university and the fundraising and the heartache and the depression and World War II and all that went with it and continue scholarly activities. And I have Rabbi Rebbe's personal edition of his doctorate. It is filled with handwritten corrections, addendums, new sources. Michael, what, we stop living when we publish a book? Take a look. I don't want to, chas v'chalila, not to compare my humble work on my Rebbe. I have corrections. There's one sentence I rewrote. Okay? It'll never be published because no publisher wants to invest money in reset type. One sentence. Rabbi Soloveitchik called my attention, and it was not that I'm wrong and not that he's right, but as I told Rabbi, it's a fielder's choice how to interpret what happened in Voloshin at that time. And I rewrote the sentence beautifully that satisfied Rabbi and satisfied yours truly. So, what is Rabbeinu Yehuda ben Arash saying to his nephew? He wrote the Tshuvat, and that was it.
Wow.
He wrote the Psakim, I should say, and that was it. Hani holecha charecha psakim, shehein hayu achronim. And once again, I recall what I said last week, what I referred to a half hour ago. Look, what I'm saying is common sense. If Rakefet can say it with common sense, Rabbeinu Yehuda ben Arash certainly can say it. What does he mean here? And once again, it could very well be that the psukim of the Rosh, hiskimu aleihem kol Yisrael. It's in every Gemara, it's in every publication of the Shas. Everyone refers to it. Every last person in this class, when you started learning, you saw Piskei HaRosh. Until today, how many of you knew about Shelet and Tshuvat HaRosh? That's something you pick up much later in life when you're much older. All right. Could be. It's exactly as Rabbeinu David Yosef said about the Rambam, that there is the point of view, the Mishnah Torah wins out. It could be this is what Rabbeinu Yehuda ben Harash meant. Okay? Very fascinating source. But this source opens the Pandora's box. And I'm going to show you everything in 1 minute. Yes, Yosef Chaim, known as Yossi to his intimate friends.
Yeah. The Rav means like
in back of the Gemara, Piskei HaRosh.
Is that the one that was written by the Tor? Because the Tor went and then went through the entire Rosh and wrote down what the Piskei HaRosh
was. No, when he means Piskei HaRosh, he means, I know you're referring to the shorthanded version of the Rosh. No, he means the Rosh in back of the Gemara, what the Rosh himself wrote. And that's what the Tor bases the Halacha upon. And the Tor will quote the Tshuvat HaRosh, but the heart of it is the Piskei HaRosh. And when they contradict, he wrote that last. No, I have a real problem with that. None of us die 1 second after completing. In other words, maybe it happens once in a million times. But you mean to say that's what he wrote and he never wrote a Tshuvah afterwards? So I leave open, remember what I told you last week. I did it quickly, and I don't want to elaborate. But it could be it's part of that very concept of Kiddush HaChodesh. I mean, those Mishnayot at the end of Perek Sheni of Rosh Hashanah, that sukya is a frightening, frightening sukya. That Rabbi Yehoshua was right, and yet he was wrong. You follow me? Rabbi Gamliel wins out, even though mathematically he would have flunked out of graduate school. But you see, there has to be a central authority. You can't go, and everyone can't turn up Tshuva HaRosh. We can't go to every Geniza and find every piece of paper that the Rosh wrote. And that could very well be. That's the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Nun Tet. And even though the ultimate truth, if there is ultimate truth in that concept, was with Rebbe Eliezer, but there's a different ultimate truth. That the halacha is acharei rabim, and if the chachamim paskin a certain way, Rabbi Eliezer chas v'chalila can have a din of a zakin mamre. So it could be that this is the way we have to understand Rabbi Yehuda ben HaRosh. Now let me give you these sources and show you something very fascinating. First of all, your generation lives at a time where everything is being edited. To me, it is great Atmos Nefesh, because I have sources referring to the Tor, which is hard enough to find, because the Tor did not subdivide his Simanim, as you know. And that's why in the Shulchan Aruch, everything is subdivided. He learned from the Tor not to make that mistake. Today, the Tor has been re-edited and re-edited, and instead of 7 volumes of Tor Shulchan Aruch, how many are there? 30? I don't even know. It's beyond words. Until I can find something, it is a killer. What's fascinating about the edited edition of the Tor, or one of the edited editions, I believe it's the first time in the history of Torah that a set of Svarim of this magnitude has been sponsored for publication by a hotel. No? Hotel Deborah in Tel Aviv. The owners, the founders, religious Jews. It's one of the first real religious hotels in the country with total, you don't need mashgichim there. You need mashgichim, but I mean the owners, only Shabbat, only Kashrut, a shul in the building. Hotza'at mostat shirat devara, Machon Yerushalayim. You look inside, on the copyright page, all rights reserved, Hotel Deborah, LTD. How do you say that in English? Incorporated? What's the word you use in English? Am I right? And what's the word? What's the word? I can't hear.
Limited.
Limited. LTD. Limited in English. No, I think that's English. I don't know in America if they use that. Hotel Deborah. Okay, I'll accept. And it's unbelievable. This is Machon Yerushalayim. Now, Hamalva al Hamashkin. All of you know Pashat Mishpatim. There's no other Pasha in the Torah. I once heard Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelik and Rabbi Mendel Zaks in the hallway of Yeshiva University, the main academic center, the main building today. I don't even know what you call it, but the original building. So I heard them discussing Pashat Mishpatim, how many Daf Gemara there have to be on Pashat Mishpatim. I think they reached the conclusion that it's close to 800, 900 dapim, baba kamim, baba mitzim, baba batra, and they were going through other gemaras that deal with sugyas in Pashat Mishpatim. Fine. No, what's one of the central sugyas? Dalet Shomrim. Okay, so you have a Shomer Sacha, you have a Shomer Chinam, all right, you have a Shoel, a Socher, but a Shomer Chinam and a Shomer Sacha. And you all know the differences. A Shomer Sacha has to take on much more responsibility, and a Shomer Chinam, Geneva, Veda, he's patur, just has to prove that it's as he says. Now, Hamalve al Hamashkon. You all know the concept of security. The world went under financially because in America, maybe elsewhere, they gave endless loans to people who could not pay back. And this is why, you know, before you get a loan, if the bank is responsible, they have to check it out, see what your assets are, see what guarantees the loan, and this is common sense in the business world. Well, we find this in Shas and Poskim. Hamalvel Hamashkin. You borrow $1,000 from someone, so you give him an autographed copy of From Washington to Washington. You understand, gentlemen, a little smile, a sense of humor. You borrow $1,000 from someone, and you want to give him a guarantee, so you say, I'm lending you till a mashkan, I'm giving you security until I pay the loan back. You have my autographed copy of From Washington to Washington. Okay. Now, the question is very simple. The guy took your mashkan. Is he a Shomer Sacha or a Shomer Chinam? People found out he had an autographed copy of From Washington to Washington. They stalked out the house. They put a ladder up. They came in through the window. And the copy is missing. It has been lifted. No? Shomer Sacha or Shomer Chinam? Interesting question. Hamavel Amashkin? He's not getting paid. Yet he is getting paid. Gives him peace of mind. It's a guarantee. It's worth $1,000. It's an autographed copy. Could you imagine you have a Lahavdil, a Joe DiMaggio biography signed by Joe D. himself? Wow. Okay. A baseball signed by Joe D. You know what those costs. Okay. So you get a mashkan. You're enjoying it. You have it. You look at it. It gives you peace of mind. It's a very agile question. How would we say a very sensitive question here. Is it Yishoma Sacha or Yishoma Chinam? Look into the Torah Techoshin Mishpat. Siman Ayin Bet. Page Tuf Nun Vav. It begins right at the bottom of the page. I am quoting from the Shirat Devora, Hotel Devora, Machon Yerushalayim edition. If you take the regular tour, you'll find it in the middle of Siman Ayin Bet, where there is a reference to a footnote in the Prisha Lamed Hay. And the tour writes, Af al pi shekatav b'tshuvot shekamal v'al hamashkan shomer sachar b'psakim katav shehu shomer chinam. Wow. Excuse me. Wow. What a contradiction. In a tshuva, he writes openly. He says, Shomer Chinam. He didn't pay. He lent money out. The mashkin is only a mashkin. He wants the money. Doesn't want the mashkin ultimately. If he wanted the mashkin, he would have bought it. But he took it to have some guarantee. But he says, Shomer Chinam. In the Psakim, in the Tshuva, he writes, he's a Shomer Sachar. He is gaining peace of mind. His loan is covered. He doesn't have to worry. You can understand this machloket. This is business. This is life. Those of you that are business people, those of you that this is always a problem. You should know lawyers, doctors, accountants, they can do people and people don't pay. Run away. What are you going to do? You can't sue everyone. It's a problem. Insurance companies, till you collect. I know dentists who will not take insurance company patients because they say it's not worth the aggravation with the forms, and until you collect, rather have a smaller office with less patients than be involved with insurance companies. A mashkon is, it's peace of mind. It's right there in your hands. In the tshuva he writes, he's a shomer sachar. So you see, here you have a machloket right in front of your eyes. Who do you paskin like? And the Torah writes, we paskin like the psakim, that he's a shomer chinam. Why the psakim? The achritahi. The psakim were written last. What did Rabbi Yehuda ben Harash say? The psakim were written last. What does Rabbi Yaakov ben Harash say? The psakim were written last. And then he spells it out. V'lo katavti tshuva zu, ele lilmod mimenu chiluk zeh, l'mi sheposek shehu shomer sachar. He spells it out. And I'm telling you this, and I'm only quoting the tshuva, so that you should know, if you paskin that he's a shomer sachar, you're making a mistake. You're going against the tradition. The psakim were written last. The psakim were a final say. The psakim are what we accept. The tshuva is negated, abrogated. Use whatever word you want. Wow. So far, so good. Both sons, the most famous of his sons, the greatest lamdanim of his sons, line up in favor of the tshuvat. Look into the Prisha and you'll see the unbelievable machloket that haunts us until this very moment, will haunt us next year when we deal with Kitvei Yad, Lahalacha, Chazon Ish, etc., what Michael the wise man mentioned. Gentlemen, somehow the Rishonim struggled with this because common sense was against both sons of the Rush. Who says that every tshuva he wrote was written before the Psakim? It's impossible. A person writes, a person is a posek, a person is bothered, a person is turned to. What? And after Rav Moshe published his volume on Ibn Ezra, his volume on Yoredeya, his volume on Orach Chaim, we were dancing in the streets. You don't know what an impact that had. I believe I write about it in Washington. Until then, we used to talk about Rav Moshe Baal Peh. Now we had it in Rosh. What, he stopped paskening? So many shaylot came up afterwards? And you know very well that ultimately you wind up with machloket. What did Rav Moshe say? You have this and you have that, the classic. Did he permit Thanksgiving Day? Didn't he permit Thanksgiving Day? One of the later volumes, I think it's volume 7. You have a whole kundris. Did he permit women studying Mishnah? Didn't he permit women studying Mishnah? Now Rav Schechter threw a bombshell, which is unbelievable. In the interview, by the way, the interview, if you saw this week's Olam Katan, there already was a rebuttal of the interview. And they told me just now from America, I was speaking with someone in America, that the outcry there is so great that Rav Heschel gave a special shiur, which they come here on YU. Check it out tonight, Joseph Chaim. Defending what he said. I just spoke with someone who's a big Talmud Chacham and knows Rav Heschel as well. And he told me that they just gave a shiur last Thursday, defending what he said in that interview. But you have Rav Moshe Feinstein. I don't even repeat. Olam Katan. No. How does Rav Moshe write certain tshuva if his own family doesn't observe what he's writing? Well, life is life. Life is dynamic. Life is not stationary. And how do you know? What? He finished writing. That was the end. And then you have the problem, all that comes out after a person dies. What's legitimate? What can you depend upon? What is accurate? And gentlemen, I'll give you the sources in a minute. I'll give you the Prisha of Yehoshua Falkohain. There is a tremendous machloket already in the Rishonim. Can we ever say the Acharon Ahi? He wrote this last. At the most, perhaps, all you can say is we have a tradition that in relation to this question of Shomesacha, Shomachinam, he wrote the psak after he gave the tshuva. And that's what his children mean, the Achronahi, that this particular psak was written after the tshuva. When it comes to Havdalah for an Onen, the next day or 2 days later, whenever the Aninut ends, and today you can have examples of people traveling from America to bury here, you know that they can be in Aninut for 2 days. It's absolutely halacha lemaisa, you should be aware of it. And someone getting on a plane, an Onen, you have to know that you have to tell them right away, you can't have meat. Okay, today wine is not a problem. El Al no longer gives out wine. And one time you used to give everyone a bottle of wine who flew El Al. But cost not cost, then it's a different world today. But you can't have meat. I had a Talmud, a big Talmud Chacham, was coming on the plane to bury his father, and a big Talmud Chacham, the Dayelet, says to him, we know you can't have meat. And he didn't know what she was talking about. You understand? Because these are halachot that you learn once in your life, but Baruch Hashem, it should never be halacha l'maisa until you're 100 years old. You got to remember, all right, that particular psak was written after the tshuva. Or no? When Rabbeinu Yaakov and Rabbeinu Yehuda say what they said, Rakefet, don't be a wise guy. Don't play games. This is it. The psukim count. The tshuvot, they're in Geniza. They're in Favofen Esfarim. I don't know how to say that in English, Yosef Chaim. Favofen Esfarim. How do we say that in English? Favofen Esfarim. No one here knows English. Take a look. I'm not the only one. What? You know Favofen?
So we need Parah.
Oh, we need Reb David Parah. I just Xerox today from the Chasdei David for paying Shurim. Shurim for next year. I won't reach them this year. I haven't gone through it yet. I have it in my office, actually. I'm taking it home tonight to see if I'm able to concentrate. I want to start going through it. Yeah. Okay. Favofen Esfarim scattered. You understand? Wow. Gentlemen, who is the Drisha Prisha? Rav Yeshua Falk Kohen. You've come across him many times. I believe he wrote the Sma as well in Chashim Mishpat. He was a German Rav. Before the Enlightenment, it's still, you can check them out. I believe they were talking the early 1700s. I'll tell you something very interesting. He left a very large family that continues until today. Generally speaking, anyone named Falk, F-A-L-K, is a direct descendant of Rabbi Yeshua Falk Cohen. On my block, there was a Professor Falk. His wife is still, she'll live and be well. It was a yekka character par excellence, a frum, and yet he could daven in the vakshe derech, reconstructionist. It was very hard to understand him. His wife used to say, he's ahead of his times, if you understand what that means. But he was a direct descendant, taught at Hebrew U. I knew him very well. I just see what he looks like in front of me with a yekka shabod, but he was like a bedfellow of David Hartman. You understand? It was that type. Okay, so this is the Prisha, where he goes in. I'm quoting now the Prisha, the Achrona, and he says, there is one opinion, and this opinion is the opinion of one of the great early Rishonim who had a great impact on the Ashkenazic Halacha, the Marik, Rav Yosef Kolon. You all know the Ramah quotes him many, many times, Psakov Asa Besof Yamav, that this is 100% a fact. He stopped answering questions. He locked himself into a room. He concentrated on the psakim, and he said, no one is to bother me with anything else. Period. And this is a rule. Wherever you will find a contradiction in the rush, we follow the psakim, not the tshuva. Then he says, I'll give you these exact sources later today or next time. Then he says, we found other Achronim who discussed this issue. And they say, no, Eina rotza loma shepsakav asa achakol shavuvatav. Umamela, Bechoma Kom Chain Ikar Neged Shibuvatav. No, this is illogical. It doesn't make sense. How can you say that the Psakim were made after all his Tshuvat? He was alive, he was kicking, he was the Gadol Hadar. People came to him from all over. Ela Kavanato Tshuvazu the Katavba the Hamalva Al Hamashkan, who Shoma Sacha, Oto Heshiv called them Ktivat v'Chibur Psakav. That it only means in this particular case, We have a tradition that this question and this answer and this entire problem only came up before he wrote the Psakim. Avovadai heshiv kametshuvot b'chagmar chibur psakav. And obviously, it's common sense. It's definite. It's a svara. I don't have to tell you, a svara has a chalais d'oraita. You should know that. You can look into Mishpat Ivri. You'll get all the sources from Professor Menachem Elon. It's common sense that he gave other answers. It's only that particular case. And he says, we have in Yoredeya a similar question, and I'll come to it. And we know that it's only that particular case, and many of the late Rishonim and early Achronim say the lav klala kayal b'zeh. It's not a general rule. So you see, this machloket points us. Once again, what do you do? How do you paskin? How do you approach it? Is it all the tshuvot were written before? Or only this particular tshuva? Okay? And this is one tremendous source. Shoma Socha, Shoma Chnina. Question hangs fire. Gentlemen, let me give you one more source where there's a tremendous machloket. And this source, a student showed me before you were born, Moshe Shuchmacher. I believe he lives in Kiryat Arba, Hebron today. Early student, married to a student. Fascinating source. Gemara in Baba Batra, Daf Yud Bet, Amud Bet, deals with an interesting sugya. Person should go out of his way to be nice, particularly where it doesn't cost him anything. All right, that's a basic rule, a basic concept. You're all familiar with it. Yasita Hayashiv Bahatov. Particularly if it doesn't cost you anything. Okay. Here you have an individual. He bought land. It's his land, his property. His father dies. Father leaves a large estate. Right next to his land. He bought the land near his father's property. He now has to split the land with his brother. Can he say to the brother, give me half the land adjacent to mine? It's much better for me to have one continuous piece of property. Or can the brother say to him, no, if you want that land specifically divided in half next to your property, not do a goral, not put it up for a lottery, how would you divide it with a goral? Divide the land in half, draw lots, you get this, I get this, you want the piece right next to you, pay me extra for it. That piece is valuable to me, and you want it, pay for it. Have you learned this Gemara? It's a fascinating Gemara. And there's a tremendous machloket, Rashi and Tosfot. Can the brother say this? Or does he have to give a reason? You just can't come along and tell a person, this land is more valuable to me. Be a mensch. Why are you harming your brother? Why are you hurting your brother? Your brother bought this land. This piece should be next to his. Let it be continuous. Why slap his face? or no. A person has the right to say, I like this piece. Don't have to give a reason. I have rights to it. You don't want a goral, you don't want to chance it. You want it guaranteed? Give me something for it. Tremendous machloket rishonim. Let me read the Gemara to you. Look it up later. Hahu de zaben ara mitzvei devei nashya. A man bought land. Rashi says, kana kaka etzu sada aviv. Right next to his father's property. Fine. His father died. When they divided it up, he says to his brother, give me the land next to the property. Amar Rabba, kigon ze kofin al midat stom. It's the old principle. Ze nehene v'ze lo chaser. You have to be a mensch. Ze nehene v'ze lo chaser. I remember learning this Gemara, and when Reb Mendel Zaks came in to give a bechina, he said to the class, he asked the question, tell me, if you see a garbage can you throw your garbage into it? A garbage can. Zenene v'zelo chaser. Or no, that garbage can belongs to someone's personal property. By the way, in Yerushalayim, it's not a problem. You can. The garbage cans belong to the city. So you have a right to throw your garbage wherever you want. It's not that it's your personal garbage can for your house. Every house gets garbage cans. But the garbage cans belong to Yerushalayim. And I know in my building we have two tremendous garbage receptacles. And people come next door, throw into it. Sometimes when I walk out of the house through my parking lot, it's easier for me to throw it into the garbage that's right beyond my house, next to the next building. But what an interesting case. Can you force the brother, give me that property? Or can the brother say to you, for me, it needs, it's worth more. Pay me for it. Rabbi says, Kofin al me that stone. Matkifla Rabbi Yosef. Amrile. Achim alinan le aluhu veinich say de veimarion. And Rabbi Yosef says, no, the brother can say, that land is worth a lot more to me. What does it to mean? Kaveimaron? So some achlokes you showed him how to interpret it. But basically it means a very wealthy individual. That land is worth a lot more to me. It's like the land that's precious, it's good. It could be, it's a land which does not need irrigation. It's a land that the rain pours on it. You'll see Rashi, you'll see Tosfot, you'll see various reasons. And therefore this land, he's giving reasons, Rashi explains, Shezuma Varechet Mishach HaSadeh, it gets more rain, it gets rain goes all over, it's not like irrigation goes in one place, not in another place, but according to Rashi, you have to give reasons. You look into the Tosfot, and Tosfot says, no, I don't agree with Rashi. What do you mean it's more valuable land? What do you mean it gets more water? And even lands that get rain, sometimes there's not enough rain. Upirish Rabbeinu Tam Malim Ken Nikse Devar Medyon Lo Niten Lechas Chutz Yeshtona Besad Azu Im Lo B'damim Yekarim Kamo B'nei Meryon Shechayu Asherim V'lo Hayu Mochrim Karko Otrehem Ela B'damim Yekarim. Tosfot says he doesn't have to give a reason, he doesn't have to be correct, he doesn't have to justify it. All he has to say is, we are like the wealthy family, this land is our land, I have rights to this land, and you cannot compel me to give it to you chinam. You want this land? Pay up. Give me for it. Give me something. Make me feel that I have gained by giving it to you. Wow. Who is right? Who is right? Rashi? Tosfot. Who is right? Tremendous machloket. Tremendous machloket. Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Rashi, you'll see, you must have a reason. You must justify it. You must explain. And according to Rabbeinu Tam, you don't need a reason. You can just say, it's worth a fortune to me. I value this land like Donald Trump values his properties. This is a Trump land. This is a Trump property. You want it? Pay up. Look into Rabbeinu Asher, right on this sugya, Perek Rishon, Baba Batran, the standard Vilna edition of Shas, page 360. Look into the second column, and he quotes Rabbeinu Tam, and he goes into great detail with Rabbeinu Tam, and ends off, El shemalin oto bishvil shechaviv alav b'lo tam v'ta'ana. And he ends off paskening exactly like Rabbeinu Tam. The person can demand money, can demand compensation. He needs no reason, no logic. He simply has to say, this is worth more to me. It's a Trump field. Rabbeinu Tam is right. That's exactly the way the Rush paskins in his Psakim on the Gemara. Open up the Tshuva Tarash, and I'm quoting from the edited edition, Machon Or HaMizrach, Machon Yerushalayim, 1994, edited by Rabbi Yitzchak Shlomo Yudlov. The Tshuva Tarash, that generally is a small little volume, here becomes a massive multi-volume set. It puts it all together, beautifully edited. I'm quoting from Klal 97 on page Tuf Dalid. I'm quoting the second column, the second paragraph. And here, Ulinyan Psakalacha, nearly Kaperish Rashi, Shanatantam, the Divrei Rav Yosef, the old, the Sugya de Talma, Mashma, Kaperish Rashi. And once again, you see an unbelievable contradiction. In the Tshuva, Rashi is right. How dare you be Agzari? How dare you be like stone? How dare you follow the letter of the law? You have nothing to lose. Be a mensch. Give the driver right of way. Give him the field he wants. It's adjacent to his father, to the field he bought. Your father's field is coexistent with him. Don't be mean. Don't be cruel. Like Rashi. And in his Psakim, 100% like Rabbeinu Tam. You don't need reason. That's life. That's the way I feel. This desk is valuable to me. It's like every other desk in the room. No, I have a psychological attachment to this desk. I teach on this desk. Okay. Now I got to mark it to be sure that it's not moved around and it remains the desk I'm teaching from. Follow? What a machloket. Wow. No. Lemayendorf, how do we paskin? Labriot? Look into Choshen Mishpat. Siman Kufay and Dalad. How do we paskin? Look into Choshen Mishpat and look into the Psak in the Tur. Afal Pishin Chelek Echad Shavel Chavei Klum. Eli Yecholim Lahalot Alav Harbei. Afal Pisha Eina Shavel Kokach Li Adam Acher. Yomru Be'einenu Hu Shava Kokach. And the Tur Paskins, exactly like Rabbeinu Tam, exactly like the Rush in his Klalim. Wow. And once again, look into the Visha, right underneath, the same Rabbi Yeshua Falkolheim. And he says, even though in the Tshuva, the Rush paskin differently, he paskined like Rashi, but the Drisha says this is not the first time that we find contradiction. And the minute there is a contradiction, the halacha is like the psakim. The psakim carry the day. We can't do both. Machlokes, Rashi, Tosfot. One way or the other way, the psakim carry the day. Wow. So you see, with the Rush, this issue is an open issue. I would say even a painful issue. Common sense says he had to give tshuva after he wrote the psakim. And nevertheless, we paskin like the psakim, not like the tshuva. Others disagree. It's only in these isolated areas where we had a tradition, where we know this is the psak, and the psak was after the tshuva, but it can't be a general rule. Or no, kimu v'kiblu, hiskimu aleim kol Yisrael, the psakim win out. Okay, so what did we do today? I just want to say a brief thought on the Haggadah, leave you with something to say, Leil Haseda. But what did we do today? What a fascinating topic. The Rush contradicts himself. Shomasacha, Shomachinam, Havdalah, Onen, Potter. No, only enjoined, but not exempt. When he can do it, he has to do it. And here with Kofen al Midat Stone, do you need a reason? Don't you need a reason? Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, and in all these instances we say the halakha is like the psakim, although it may very well be that it's only in these instances where we have a tradition. Okay, Adkan, we have a world more to do, but we're going to get involved with Rabbi Yosef Karo, and it's a fascinating issue that affects halacha, affects our thinking, affects our psakim, affects the entire approach. How do you deal with these contradictions? What comes last? What comes first? Ultimately, we have to be thankful to Reb Moshe Feinstein that he gave dates on his tshuvot, so you know what comes first and what comes last, essentially. One year, I'll be able to show you the Rashban, Hafkat Kedushin, and you'll see absolute contradictions between Tshuvot HaRashba. And until today, we will never know what he holds with Afkad Kedushin, because we have no dates on the Tshuvot. Okay. Let me say something, gentlemen. Very fascinating. I heard this originally from the Rav. I found it in the Balei Musa, and I've written about it in context. The Seder that we do, Leil HaSeder, the most important point of the Seder, basically, for us today, we do backwards. We don't do Kaseder. What is the biggest mitzvah of all that we have, Leil HaSeder? Achilat matzah? No? Achilat maror? All right. Maybe at the Rabbanim Bisman Hazeh, we don't have a Korban Pesach. But nevertheless, the highlight, matzah and maror. And even the Sfadim and the Ashkenazim, all of us do it incorrectly. First we make a bracha on the matzah, and then we make a bracha on the maror. I think if you look at it historically, you'll all agree that the maror came before the matzah. And here we reverse ourselves. What's going on? The Leil HaSeder, we're reliving history. Well, if you're reliving history, first al achilat mara, and then al achilat matzah. Baruch atah Adonai Olam Hashem, Kol Yisrael. Beautiful question. A very profound answer. In life, as individuals, and in life as a community, we all go through difficult periods. No one can say they have a life where they haven't suffered. It's part of being a human being. The vicissitudes of life, the maelstrom of life. I don't have to elaborate. Sometimes it's within family, sometimes within friends, sometimes within school, sometimes within profession. I need not tell you the Jewish people what we have gone through. If we allow the suffering to continuously defeat us, haunt us, torture us, we're not going to succeed in life. The greatness of God's creation, that He gave us defense mechanisms, and a healthy person has wonderful positive defense mechanisms that enable him to kneel, to knit, to heal, to go further, to resuscitate himself, to recharge himself. Ultimately, the bad fades and the good takes over. If you don't have those defense mechanisms, chas v'chalila, you remain a cripple. We saw this after the Holocaust, what these people went through, and among them your parents, grandparents, great-grandparents. We can't even start to understand. As many who survived have said, it was a world in which death was the norm and life was the exception. When the redemption came, people went further. The minority who couldn't go further and let the bitterness overtake them remained institutionalized, some until today. The overwhelming majority, and that's what I write about in the Silver Era, how Reb Lezer Silver, when he gave out money in the DP camps, always made a condition that you have to remarry, you have to have children, you have to start all over. And believe me, it was very hard. Very hard. You lose the wife of your youth, you lose the husband of your youth, you lose the children. Start all over. You want to be cynical, sarcastic. How can you? But they did. And that's why we're sitting here. And this is why Anshei Knesset HaGadol, who understood human nature, Baruch Hashem, Avadim, Hayinu, Lefaro, B'Mitzrayim. But we went out. We got the Torah. We got Eretz Yisrael. We became a nation. We became a people. We started a heroic march that continues until today. The romance of the Jewish people is indescribable. Mikamcha Yisrael. They were very smart. A human being, first eat the matzah. You're living matzah. You're enjoying matzah. Only afterwards did they ask us, pause and remember how you began. Remember what you went through. But the Anshei Knesset HaGadola insisted, we have to go against the historic chronological order. We have to set an example for human emotion, for human achievement, for the romance to continue. Eat the matzah. Enjoy the matzah. And then pause for a little more. Said Meir de Kvart, gentlemen. And I need not tell you how well you can apply it to our existence and our continuous march at this moment in time, as much as it ever could be applied. Finally, I just want to tell you, tomorrow we're still hitting very hard and very high and very sharp. And I hope to end off, when I finish Das Torah, to give a few lectures on a attitude towards Charedim, because I don't want to leave you with the sharpness of the criticism. I want to explain to you the Charedim mindset and where that challenge is and speaks to us. Okay, if anyone wants the article on Rav Yosef Karo, here is on Rav Scheinberg, some English publication that has been thrown around. And is there anyone here who has a little bit of a Chabad soul in him? Anybody? These are pictures that were just published for the first time. It's the last day that the Rebbe was still well before the final stroke. And that day, he stood on his feet. It was Sunday. He gave out thousands of dollars. And at night, after Marav, a Chatan V'Kala came and waited outside as he was walking out to get his bracha. And this is the final picture of the Rebbe before the stroke. You can see he does not look well. If anyone wants it, you're welcome to it. And tune in again in health and happiness. Das V'Danya. Thank you very, very much.